welcome to another episode of The Cocktail Conceit. This is a podcast where two craft cocktail bartenders chat about craft cocktails, booze, the hospitality industry, and every once in a while we talk about The Rock in the movies that he's been in. My name is Adam.
And my name is Logan.
We are your hosts, and at the end of the podcast, we have to make a cocktail based on the most recent Rock movie that we watched, because that's the conceit.
And we are watching chronologically, which is funny for other reasons. It's funny for this movie in particular.
We had to pick an order in which to watch all of the Rock's movies, so we just decided to start at the beginning on the IMDb page and go in order. And it's pretty fun to do that.
I think it's mostly because we wanted to watch The Mummy Returns, and then we realized The Mummy Returns was bad, so it didn't really benefit us too much.
No. So we just decided to like double down and throw bad money after bad.
Just gotta keep going. But it's really funny for this movie because you want to just go introduce it now or you want to wait?
Okay, the movie we're going to be talking about today and making a cocktail based on is called Be Cool.
Be Cool.
Which is a 2005 sequel to a 1995 movie.
Called Get Shorty, which I've never seen. Have you seen it, Adam?
No, I've never seen Get Shorty.
Good. I was kind of hoping that would happen.
It's also so we're watching a sequel to a movie that we don't know anything about.
Mm-mm. Sure don't. I've heard Get Shorty is actually good, so maybe I'll watch that at some point, but not right now. I knew as soon as I realized it was a sequel. I watched this right on the back of Walking Tall, and I got like 2 minutes in and realized, oh, this is definitely a sequel because they were making like little inside jokes about it. And then I was like, I'm not gonna watch that. I'm not gonna watch the first one before we do this podcast. I'm not gonna.
I think it's better that way. It's more fun because exactly. We're only watching it for The Rock, who has a very minor role in this film.
I almost thought about, as I was watching this one, if we could cut this one from the list, because I did cut a few where he's like a bit part. There's one movie we've already not done because he's like literally a cameo. But I feel like this is more than a cameo. He's definitely in this movie more than he is in The Mummy Returns. So,
yeah, you know what, you're right. And yeah, he is on Amazon, which is where I watched it. He is third billed in the like little blurb.
That's so weird.
Which is definitely a modern thing for sure. Because
this
movie actually has a pretty star-studded cast.
It does. It reminds me of another movie that we did that was better.
Oh.
the movie that time forgot.
Oh yes. Big Trouble. Yeah.
Reminds me of Big Trouble.
The Tim Allen ensemble cast comedy that mm-hmm. time forgot.
That was supposed to come out 4 years earlier than this.
Yes. This has John Travolta, Uma Thurman. When I originally rented it, it only had enough room for one name. And so it said, Be Cool. And then under it said, Vince Vaughn comedy movie.
That's...
as if Vince Vaughn had, like, a really, really big role.
Yeah, I mean, he does, kind of.
He does?
He's in a lot of scenes. It's like,
yeah. He's definitely not the main character, though.
I can't get it. We should wait to get into this, because I could talk about this for a very long time.
It's a weird movie. It's a weird movie. I could say a lot and nothing about it.
Yeah, it's a whole experience. I can't recommend people watch it, but like, you know, if you want to get drunk with some friends and watch it, go for it. But don't watch the first one first.
No, it's more entertaining if you just come into this cold.
Yeah. So what are you drinking? What are you drinking, Adam?
I am again just drinking straight up whiskey.
Nice.
That bottle of blended bourbons I had from last time. Pulling back the curtain a little bit, we're recording these podcasts back-to-back, basically, because I'm going to be doing a move, and so we're getting a few in the can I got to move.
This is the closest we've done a record since I moved the last time, I'm pretty sure, because we did the same thing when I moved. We did two records within a few days. To kind of get some in. I think that was Big Trouble, actually. I think we did Big Trouble. Was one of them.
Oh, really? Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, that was the last one we did in my old house. Or old place I lived in. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm still just drinking the bottle of whiskey I have, trying to slowly get rid of that in about a week before we have to fly.
Gotta work on it. Just gotta drink it straight from the bottle.
Just gotta keep plugging it. Yeah.
Just rip it straight from the handle.
I'm just going to take a hammer, break the neck off. So I got to just
go. Gotta get some glass in there too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's good for you.
I have a story about that real quick. One time when I was working at a bar, I was, making some cocktails, and I was working. I had a speed rack in front of me filled with bottles of liquor. Mm-hmm. And as I was putting one bottle back, I nicked the top of a Bombay Sapphire gin bottle.
Huh.
And the neck just cleanly slide, because those bottles are square shaped.
Yeah.
And so right where it goes from being a square until it tapers into a circular bottle neck, it just broke off clean. And then so there was just this giant square opening of a bottle with like half of a bottle of gin sitting in it. But I had to throw the whole thing out because there could be glass in it.
Yeah.
I mean, so what I did,
you could have strained it, but
so what I did was I ran to the back and I got an empty bottle that we had gone through that weekend.
Yeah.
And then I strained it through like a tea strainer, several tea strainers into a funnel. And then I took that bottle home with me because if I drink a tiny shard of glass, that's on me.
Yeah. So, that could also kill you.
Yes, but I was pretty confident there weren't any shards of glass.
If you send it through a tea strainer, you're probably good.
Yeah, I strained it pretty good.
Yeah, it's not like it turned into like glass particles or something, you know.
Yeah, if it was small enough to get through that tea strainer, I felt like it was small enough that I could. I've eaten sand before as a kid at Myrtle Beach.
Gross, but yeah. I'm weird about the texture of sand. Sand weird. To this day, I don't really like beaches because your feet get wet and then the sand gets all over your feet and it's terrible. It's just bad.
It's not good.
It's just
I'm not a fan of beaches.
And you can't really.
If I'm going on vacation.
Yeah, and wearing sandals doesn't really help because then your sandals get wet and then your feet get wet and then there's sand on your sandals and your feet and it like rubs between it and it's terrible. I hate it.
I honestly really think that sand is just rough and coarse and it gets everywhere.
Yeah, it's just the worst. Just the worst. That's a really good line. You should make note of that.
Maybe
put
it
in a movie at some point in your life. It's really good.
It's really good. What are you drinking today?
I am drinking a white Negroni. I think I made this once before on the cast, but I still have all the ingredients, so.
What bitter are you using?
Bitter Bianco. I still have Bitter Bianco left.
Luxardo's Bitter Bianco?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it is.
That is my favorite white bitter.
I haven't really had many others.
So good. Oh, like Sue's.
I have made this with Sue's before. It wasn't nearly as good.
No, yeah.
The Sue's is kind of the. It's got a really weird. Like, it's very floral. It's very, very floral.
Yeah.
It's very aggressive. Whereas the Bitter Bianco is just like light, sweet, bitter, and like a little bit of like a floral, citrusy note. That's it.
So good.
It's kind of what I want.
Really, really like it.
Yeah.
30%, perfect ABV for doing stuff with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice. But now I'm doing. It's a Negroni build, so it's all equal parts, 1 ounce each. And I'm doing 1 ounce Beefeater Gin, 1 ounce Bitter Bianco, and 1 ounce Cokie Americano.
Cokie Americano, also really good vermouth.
Yeah, it's super good. It's super, super good. You can do a lot of really cool stuff with it, honestly. You can make yourself a white Manhattan. But, I mean, you could do that. You could probably just do like a gin Manhattan, and it'd be really good. It's kind of
that's a martini.
Well,
isn't that exactly a martini?
Well, kind of. It would be, except that the Cokie Americano is actually a sweet vermouth. It's a white sweet vermouth.
Yeah, that and Dolin Blanc.
Yeah,
fall into that. I've heard those described as Blanc vermouth.
Right? Yeah, well, Blanc is a little different because Blanc is more like neutral, right? It's not really sweet. It's not really dry. I'm pretty sure, but I could be wrong about that. Because the Cokie Americano is like definitely sweet. It's made with like I want to say Moscato, but I could be wrong. They use a sweet wine.
And Lillet is also a sweet white vermouth.
Yeah, Lillet is the most comparable to the Cokie Americano. I've had the Dolin Blanc before, and I feel like the Dolin Blanc is it's not quite replaceable. Like you can't just 1-to-1, but you could definitely make a martini with that instead. And I think it would be closer to a martini than it would a Manhattan build, or in, like, profile, you know?
I can see that.
But, I had one of these last night, and I did the same thing I did the last time, and I just pre-batched a little bit of it. so I wouldn't have to worry about making a cocktail right before the cast.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Early in the morning. Yeah. But I, yeah.
Or late at night, depending.
Yeah, exactly. And then I just do like a little citrus expression on it, and it's nice. Put it on a big rock. I think I didn't quite dilute this enough, because I had a misfortunate incident. My extra large stirring glass, mixing glass, broke this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Your very large Yari.
Yeah, really. Honestly, I'm still a little bummed out about it. I haven't had the heart to throw it away also. It's kind of, you know, it's a big thing of glass, so it's like... And it's, like, partially it's broken.
It's also difficult to throw it away.
Yeah, it's like, I can't just put it in the trash can, because it's going to, you know, probably break more
rip open
and
that.
Rip that shit open. So, But, no, I broke that, and I've had to use my roommate's, he's got another mixing glass, but it's way smaller. Like, his could fit inside my old one.
Is how
much bigger mine was. Which made it really good for, like, you know, if I wanted to pre-batch some Manhattan or some Negroni or something, or Martini, I would just... put it all in one glass, I can make like five or six in that almost, depending on the cocktail.
Oh, because it was fucking huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember seeing it when I was crashing on your couch for a few weeks there.
Yeah, I forget what the ounces were, huge. But it was big. It was big mixing
glass.
You could fit like
a bottle of liquor in it.
Damn straight, yeah. Pretty close. Which is the reason why I got it, because I was like, ooh, they have a extra large Yari? That's dope. Well, it's because, like, you know, I don't know, it bothered me a lot when I was working at Fidel's. The Yaris that we had weren't super big, and you could only ever fit, two drinks maximum in it. And there were a few cocktails that, like, it would almost fit three, but then once you filled it with ice, it would, like, kind of overflow a little bit. And I always hated that. I'm like, I want to be, like, if I'm making cocktails, I don't have to make two batches in a stirred, like, a stirred cocktail for, like, multiple people, you know? I want to be able to do it all at once in one little batch. But in order to fit enough ice...
Because you always get orders for six Negronis at once.
Oh, yeah, all the time. No, well, usually it was Manhattans. Usually we would just get a bunch of orders of Manhattans.
That makes sense, because Fidel's was a whiskey bar.
Yeah, or if, you know, if you make... if you get a bunch of Old Fashions, all the same liquor, you could do that in a mixing glass, too. I've done that a lot of times.
Yeah.
As long as you're not using the granulated sugars or the sugar cubes, it works out fine. Because that shit will not stay in your mixing glass.
How are you doing today?
Not too bad. I just woke up a little bit ago. Today is my first day off after the weekend, so I'm kind of leveling out, you know. Usually this is my day of rest.
Resting.
But this was the last day that you could record before you needed to move, so we decided we're going to go ahead and make sure that happened so that we can, you know, bank an extra episode.
And I haven't been working for the past week, which is fucking awesome.
That sounds great.
Oh, my God. It's great.
Yeah.
I was pulling, like, 45, 50-hour weeks there for a bit.
Yakers.
Like, and it sucked.
Yeah, it doesn't sound
so
fun.
I'm enjoying a nice, pleasant bit of time off.
Yeah, and I'm glad you can get that, man. Yeah. I've got a Saturday in September, and I think a couple Saturdays in October coming up that I won't be able to work, so I'm gonna have to try to buckle down and work some extra shifts whenever I can in the next few weeks. So it's gonna be fun. But I've got a concert to go in Bloomington.
You're doing things.
Yeah, I'm doing things. Yeah, I've got a concert in Bloomington, and then there's a couple weddings in October that I kind of I think one of them, at least one of them, I'll probably still be at work that night. Because it was, it's our friends. A couple of our friends are getting married, and they're doing it early enough that I think I can hit the wedding and then maybe stay for the reception for a little bit and then bounce and be able to get back to work and do that.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna try to at least. I think.
When you said like, "Oh, I have a few Saturdays that I can't work," it made it sound like, "Oh, I'm going. I cannot work it. I'm going to be in my chrysalis phase in those days." Like, it's like, "Oh no, what's happening?"
I mean, it could be. You never know. Could finally evolve into my next form. It's been waiting like almost 30 years for it. So.
Oh yeah, it's gonna happen. Well, you got to go grind. Yeah. You got to go like faint more ponytas.
You're right. You're right. I haven't leveled enough.
Yeah.
Man, I haven't played a Pokemon game in a while. Might do that soon. Maybe just.
Me too. Yeah, I'm starting to get the hunger.
Yeah. There's a couple of the older ones that I haven't played. I really only need to play Black and White are the two that I need to play.
That is one of the coolest games in the whole series, I think.
it's one of those weird ones where I think Black and White got like a bad rap when it first came out, because I remember hearing kind of mixed things about it, and then everyone I've talked to afterwards, like more recently, is like, oh no, Black and White 1 and 2 are like easily two of the best Pokemon games.
Oh yeah, they very much are.
Because I think
super cool, really good plot.
I was playing them pretty consistently, like as a kid, until Diamond and Pearl, and then Diamond and Pearl was really bad.
Diamond and Pearl was really bad.
So I stopped playing for a while, and I think
and
I
that's why no one knows about Black and White, because everyone stopped playing after Diamond and Pearl.
We've talked about this before, man. If your prequel is good, your sequel will be benefited. If your prequel is bad, your sequel will not.
We'll reap what was sown. Yes.
Every time. Every time, my man.
All right, well, speaking of, this movie that we're watching is a sequel.
It is indeed.
But before we get to making a drink based off of that, what we're going to talk about today is distilling and aging and barrels and such. Mm-hmm. Kind of expanding on that conversation we had towards the beginning of last episode, mm-hmm, about making booze and putting booze in barrels. Mm-hmm. And
we got into the distilling conversation. Why would do that? A little bit, yeah. Too, because you were talking about Jamaican rum specifically, I think.
Yeah,
and then the fact that it's copper pot stilled, typically. It doesn't have to be at all, but it's a pretty common tradition in Jamaica to use copper pot stills.
Yeah, so let's talk about like making something into booze and then putting that booze into barrels. So what you have to start with is something, and that something is beer, basically. Mm-hmm. Beer, wine, sake, things that you can, boozy stuff that you can make by just fermenting stuff. Mm-hmm. So beer, you ferment cereal grains, and all that means is you get a bunch of them together, anything with sugar, and yeah, then you introduce yeast into that, and yeast just goes hog wild on sugar, and it eats it all up, and it converts sugar into alcohol. And then it kills itself off because alcohol is a sterilant. So
yep.
So you can only ever get... That's why you can't find a beer that's, 50% alcohol by volume.
Yeah.
It's physically impossible.
Well, if you did, then it has added liquor, which is... Is that what malt liquor is called, usually? It's beer with added...
Oh, maybe. I think so.
That definition's perhaps always been really weird to me. I know there's a whole thing with all the flavored seltzers that are out now, all the bad ones are almost definitely made from malt liquor because they're made, mm-hmm, by companies that don't distill or don't make liquor. So they're using beer and or another like brewed or fermented liquor product to add liquor to their seltzer.
To get the alcohol, mm-hmm, needed for their seltzer?
So I was watching a YouTube video about it, but it was How to Drink, which if anyone has not watched How to Drink, very fun educational stuff. But anyway, he was talking about it, and basically there's, if you're doing the malt liquor, no matter how high of ABV you get out of it, it's going to take up more space in your can, and then you only have so much space left over to flavor and get the flavors that you want. And then usually malt liquor is also going to impart way more flavor than like vodka would if you put a vodka in a can. Do you have less space to add new flavorings, you also have to make sure those flavorings cover up or work with what you already have. And a lot of them aren't doing that. They're just trying to mask it with like sugar and fruit flavors and shit like that.
They're just trying to crank out a hard seltzer to get on the trend real fast.
Yeah, yeah, and I'll go back around on that to say that's why High Noon seltzers are so good, is because they use vodka.
Yeah, they use a distilled spirit.
Yes, so you only have to put a little bit of vodka in your can, and then the rest of it can be whatever the fuck you want.
Whatever fucking LaCroix flavor exactly, your heart desires.
And you know what? They're really good. They turn out really nice.
But when you ferment and brew something up, you can only ever get it to somewhere, if you go as hard as fuck impossible, you can only ever get the alcohol level to somewhere in the teens. Mm-hmm. Because the yeast is just going to fucking kill itself off. So yep. beer, tends to tap out between, like 4 or 5%, typical beers, if you're going to try and make one at home. Maybe you can get high up to like 10. Mm-hmm. Wines are typically somewhere around, 10 to 15. Sake, actually, can get the highest out of all brewed things, because it has something to do with like the koji, where the koji is feeding sugar into the thing that's brewing, like while it's being eaten.
My understanding,
so they can get up into the high teens.
Is that that's a process they do? They like specifically try to do that. Is why sake gets higher. Yeah, it's not like a like if you just naturally try to make sake, it'll probably end up somewhere around the same other the same as beer or wine.
Yeah, but yeah, they specifically like do like tap techniques to get the get up higher. I don't know exactly. I'm not a sake expert, but yeah, sakes tend to be somewhere between 15% and 19%,
which is probably the reason why people like to take like little shots of it instead of, you know, sipping on a glass like you would of wine or beer. But
yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
It's a little bit higher. I mean, then, really, if you can get up to like almost 20%, then that's basically like a mix shot. Like you're basically in cocktail, like ABV
cocktail territory.
Yeah,
yeah.
That makes sense.
That's why that's why it's so hard to make cocktails with beer, wine, and sake.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they don't really fit with the rest of cocktailing stuff. If you're going to add other things into it, citrus or sugars or other spirits, you're just diluting it so much that it's not really gonna be. That's not really gonna stand up.
Yeah, that's. I think the best beer and wine cocktails that I've had are all ones that either add in very few ingredients or add in extra alcohol, usually. Because I'm thinking like French 75s, they use champagne. It's a super great cocktail, but you know, think all you're adding is gin, lemon juice, simple, you know,
yeah,
Prosecco,
but even
champagne.
Then, like the champagne is basically, hey, you know what would be good on this drink? Soda water. What if we made the soda water boozy?
Yeah, exactly.
Champagne.
Yeah.
You're mostly using it for the bubbles at that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's at least not going to lower your ABV. I don't know if it'll probably bump it up a tiny bit, but not.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, as compared to if you would put soda water on instead, probably. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's mostly through the bubbles. But I'm also thinking, I saw a video on the champagne cocktail, which is literally just a. It's so funny to me because it's technically a cocktail. It is technically a cocktail, but you get a glass of champagne, or sparkling wine of any kind, and then you get a bar spoon and you put a sugar cube on it and you just douse that motherfucker in Angostura bitters, and you drop it in your champagne, and that's the cocktail.
That's it, yeah.
It's honestly pretty good, but it's only because it just tastes like Angostura bitters. I love Angostura bitters.
That's fine. That's great. Yeah, that's a good way to drink it.
Yeah, it's like, hey, what if you made Angostura bitters bubbly? And those are like, you know, two things I like a lot. I like carbonated stuff, and I like cake Angostura bitters, so it's perfect.
There's also, I can think of two other champagne cocktails. One is Cure Royale, which is, let's take champagne and put half an ounce of creme de mure in it, or creme de cassis.
Mm-hmm.
Just some purple, sugary French liqueur.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I guess that's a cocktail.
I mean, it's better than a mimosa. Mimosa's technically a cocktail.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's just orange juice and Prosecco on top.
I really don't like mimosas. I really
don't.
You know,
it's also another one, Death in the Afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a glass of champagne with a shot of absinthe in it.
Sure is. So I actually did so at the bar that I work for, we did a collaboration with a local bookstore. And there is a, I'm going to blank on the author's name.
Hemingway.
Hemingway, yeah. It was a Hemingway biography that was coming out by a local author. And so the bookstore was doing like a little release event. And they wanted to do a cocktail event with us afterwards based on Hemingway's cocktail, or cocktails commonly associated with Hemingway. He only actually came up with like two or three. But one of the ones that he drank a lot and was really commonly associated with him was Death in the Afternoon.
Champagne and absinthe.
And I tried that, and I was like, this is bad. So what I did instead is I turned it into a French 75 build, and I used a really high proof absinthe. I used Pernod. And did an ounce of that and a little bit of lemon juice, a little bit of simple syrup, shake, you know, top of Prosecco, and it turned out really good, actually.
That sounds awesome. I would definitely like to try that. I don't think just throwing a shot of absinthe into a glass of champagne would be good at all.
No, it's not.
Why would it?
It's not good. I promise you. I was like, yeah, well, I mean, maybe I could see the champagne, like, maybe trying to balance out the absinthe, but no, it's just, it's you're just drinking bubbly absinthe, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not into that. Not into that at all. But, I don't know.
So, getting back to our distill topic.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you get something like a champagne or a wine or a beer or a sake or such, you have to make... You have to get the alcohol out of it in order to, like, collect it all and put it in a box and have it be yours. And the way to do that is to heat it up, because alcohol's boiling point is lower than water's, which means you can heat it up to pretty hot but not boiling, and the alcohol will start to come off of it as steam. But unfortunately, all you're doing at that point is just releasing the alcohol openly into the air, which isn't going to get you drunk either. So you have to capture all the steam. And what humans came up with, and only a few hundred years ago, because distilling has only been around for a few hundred years.
Yeah, it's fairly new.
Yeah. Yeah, it was discovered in the Middle East during like the golden age of Islam, during like the caliphate. That's why one of the oldest stills is an alembic still. Mm-hmm. With that AL in front, like algebra and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
That's another and alcohol. Alphabet. That's another alphabet, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you get a big old vat of whatever you're brewing up, and then you build a fire under it to get it hot, and then you put a giant dome of copper over the top, and you only give it a little tiny spout to go out of in the very top, and it's just another copper tube, a copper pipe that goes up, and then you bend that pipe at like a 45 degree angle down, so that when the vapor hits the corner, it starts to run down the pipe, and it slowly starts to cool off the steam and drips out as a liquid, and that liquid is booze, alcohol.
Yep. It's honestly a pretty simple device, but it's really interesting. How innovative that was for the time too, and it is still to this day. Like, obviously, the other kind of distilling is column distilling, which is a more modern version of that, and more effective at what it's trying to do. But well, depending on your opinion,
if what you're trying to do is like a chemistry style, I'm going to pull this one chemical out of this solution, then column still is the way to go.
It's more effective at getting straight just alcohol. That's, you know, a lot of that's why a lot of liquor today is now made that way, because it's more convenient. You're going to get more alcohol yield by what you're doing. It's going to come out a lot cleaner. You're not going to get as many particulates.
The big thing is that in general, like, there are two types of stills in the world: pot stills and column stills. There are other types like coffee stills, but those are niche and not really as popular. And basically what you get is pot stills, old tech, big ass vat, and you have to do runs. So you can get a big batch of beer and then you burn it all up, and then you have to stop, clean out that giant drum, and then refill it. With a column still, you can have it running 24/7 and keep refilling it. I am not as knowledgeable about column stills.
They get kind of technical, but basically the idea is that they're set up so that they're set up in a way in which it collects a lot more stuff on the way up, rather than like a pot still is like literally just one giant vat. So the column still's got like layers. That's why it's called a column. It's got like different layers throughout it, so that it catches and separates the steam and the alcohol as it's going up. And it basically catches more of the other stuff that's in it, and you end up with basically just alcohol at the end. Regardless, you usually still have to do I forget what the phrase is for it. You got to cut your heads and tails off is the big thing, and it's actually kind of a... So, one of the other things that's produced in the means of making alcohol is it ethanol?
Ethanol is what people think of as good drinking alcohol. Right. Ethanol.
So it's not ethanol. Yeah. It's the what's in the heads and tails. Mm-hmm. There is
methanol.
Methanol. Yeah, that's it. So there's, it's the stuff that'll kill you if you drink it, and that's one of the reasons. If you ever heard stories of moonshine making you go blind or killing you,
yeah,
or having really negative health effects, is because they didn't cut their heads and tails off properly, and you ended up with,
yeah,
a chemical in your alcohol. Like, it was probably still mostly ethanol, but if you get even a little bit of methanol in there, it's a very harmful to the human body because it can't really break it down very easily. I don't know if it can break down, yeah, at all, actually, and that's why it...
ethanol is poison, but it's a fun poison that we can digest.
Yeah,
methanol, not so much.
Yeah, not so good for you. I mean, they're both probably not great for you, but
yeah,
at least the ethanol. Well,
fortunately,
your body can break down a sugar. So,
yeah,
there you go.
Fortunately, there's a, so heads are where a lot of that is located, and mm-hmm, then tails is the end of a distilling run when you're getting down. There, the liquid is like low, and usually tails are fine to drink,
mm-hmm,
but they just taste like ass.
Yeah. You end up with a lot of your mash or whatever you started with. It's going to impart a lot more flavor in your tails than the rest of it. Because, yeah, you just
and
have
the
less
heads also
things.
Don't taste great. No. But what I've learned more recently from watching like some more distilling videos is there's a section of the heads called the four shots, which is the stuff that very first comes off the still.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the stuff that is like super poison.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff that you really, really don't want to mess with, is the stuff that very first comes off the still once you get it cooking. And that's where... It's really great and convenient for us. It's the reason why we can make liquor, mm-hmm, is because it's very kind to us and very thoughtful that it just goes, oh, you're making liquor. Well, you know what? Let me go ahead and pack my bags up and get out of here so you guys can get on with your business. I'll just sneak on out of here. Yeah. And
I'll get out of here first while you guys have a party after I'm gone. It'll be good. Just,
yeah,
you know, don't party too late because then it's going to, you know,
yeah,
taste really shitty. But yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's, yeah, it's good. I'm sure there's probably a very specific chemical reason for why that happens. I would methanol just has a higher or a lower evaporation point, more than likely.
Yeah, yeah, it comes off faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've also heard that all those things are still present in a bottle of wine, say.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so dilute as to not be crazy, crazy dangerous.
Yeah. Well, they're not concentrated either. They're going to be a,
yeah,
lot lower because the whole point of distilling is to get a very concentrated amount of alcohol.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the difference between cocaine and coca leaves.
Yeah,
you can,
exactly,
you can go to the Andes and you can chew on some coca leaves and it might be like a nice little buzz before I go hike Machu Picchu. But if you do cocaine, it's a very different thing.
It's a very different thing. Very, very different. Yeah, you know, we should normalize chewing on coca leaves. That sounds great. Let's do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I might do that, but I'm probably never going to do cocaine.
No, I'm probably not going to do cocaine.
It's actually... So one of the big things with wine, especially, is you get a lot more tannins in that than, say, a vodka.
When you say tannins... What do you mean?
So tannin is kind of a broad term, but what it basically means is anything that's not alcohol that's in your liquor or in your drink. But typically what that means when you're talking about it, it's talked about in terms of like any aged liquors. Tannins are the things that you add in the process of aging. And then also in wine, like... red wine has more tannins than white wine because they don't peel the grapes. So like you're going to get a lot more flavor components, but also other things are going to get in the wine because you didn't peel your grapes. But usually tannins have kind of like a more bitter notes or more, what's the other word phrase? Not really
earthy.
Earthy. Yeah. It's typically how they're described, but really tannin can be pretty much anything that's not your liquor that's in it. But
it's the reason why the red wine is red.
Mm-hmm.
Tannins are the reason why the brown whiskey is brown.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And they're not really necessarily bad for you. They do impart a lot more flavor is usually what happens. Because if you compare like, you know, a whiskey to a vodka, obviously the vodka is just alcohol. It's basically just alcohol and If it's column stilled, all you're going to taste is, yeah, it's alcohol and water. And if it's column stilled, it's all you're going to taste at all. But, you know, if it's pot stilled, I'm assuming what pot still will do is probably leave in an amount of other particulates. And that's what gives you the flavor. And those are tannins, more or less.
But the big thing is,
big thing is tannins are also one of the biggest things that make your hangovers worse, other than the fact that you're drinking alcohol. So you got to think about it. Your body can process alcohol. Obviously, it has to work at it. So your clear liquors or your non-red wines or anything that doesn't have heavy tannins are going to be easier for your body to process because it's just, you know, it's just working on the alcohol. But actually, one of the other big tannins is sugar. Sugar is technically a tannin. And that's why really sugary stuff, if you drink really sugary booze, it's going to give you a really bad hangover because your body is not only trying real hard to chug out all this ethanol, it's also got to deal with all the sugar and all this other bullshit that you're throwing in at the same time. So, like, it kind of sucks that the things that make alcohol taste better are the things that are also going to make your hangover worse. It's just a thing that, you know, to think about, and it's kind of a funny thing that I learned that because when I first learned about tannins, it was only from like a wine perspective, and it was such a nebulous term that like sommeliers use, because they talk about it as like a flavoring more than anything else.
Yeah.
But when you really get into the weeds of it, it's like, yeah, tannins are, like if you're looking at the functionality of it, they're just going to make your drunk worse generally. And some people are more sensitive than others, which is also kind of unfortunate, because that means the more sensitive you are, the less you can enjoy good booze, and you have to drink just vodka. So, you know, it sucks. But it's really interesting, because like tannin, like I feel like most people have heard the term tannin before, but it only ever comes up in that like that sommelier like wine like phrasing.
Yeah, context.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when you really
but tannins are the thing that is good and is enjoyable about booze.
Exactly. You just maybe don't drink like a lot of them all the time forever, but you know, depends.
Yeah, that's, you know, red wine headaches are a thing because of all that red.
Mm-hmm.
And like the difference between people say like, oh, tequila gives me the worst hangovers or gin gives me the worst hangovers. It's like, no, it's all ethanol. It's all chemically the same. What's giving you a worse hangover is the other things associated with those. Because maybe whenever you go drink tequila, what you're actually drinking is a gallon of sugary, slushy margarita.
Right.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. Is I think tequila gets it a lot, and I think gin gets it some. Because the other thing on that is that the worse quality your liquor is, the more likely it is to have other kinds of tannins in it or other poor quality ingredients, which will tend to have more tannins. So, like,
and one of the worst, most poor quality ingredients is sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar does such a good job of covering up poor craftsmanship in distilled spirits.
Sure do.
That's why, you know, all those Pinnacle and Burnett's flavored vodkas are just chock-a-block with sugar, and you can't taste the booze.
Nope.
But it's going to give you a hell of a hangover.
Yep, and that's probably why. Well, the same thing with like tequila too. I don't know this factually about every single one of them, but I guarantee you all of your low shelf tequila that's only like it's a mixto. It's like technically tequila, like it's like legally tequila.
But it's not 100% agave tequila.
I guarantee one of the things they've added to that is probably an amount of sugar. In addition to probably whatever cheapest distillate they can get, like the cheapest liquor that they can get a hold of that's not tequila. So that's, I think that's the reason why a lot of people have really bad experiences on your tequilas, your gins, because a lot of people's first experiences are usually very bottom shelf, and if you're drinking real bottom shelf, you're going to get a worse hangover, almost definitely.
Interesting thing, specifically, since I'm moving back to New Zealand, bourbon has a real bad reputation in New Zealand because the first thing that people get hammered on there are these prepackaged, ready-to-drink bourbon and Coca-Cola, like bourbon and Coke cans. Huh. That's, like, the thing that people get hammered on at their first college party in That's New funny. Zealand.
It's their Mike's Hard.
Yeah, exactly. And it's been like that for like several decades. So everyone's first impression of bourbon is an awful hangover on their like 19th yep. birthday.
Yep. You know, I realized this here more recently because of I was kind of thinking about the the way in which we've moved towards like seltzers, like flavored seltzers or other, you know, flavored non-beer drinks, you know what I'm talking about, like your lower ABV things, and those tend to go in cycles and change over time. So when you and I were in college, Mike's Hard was the really big one.
Mike's Hard Lemonade. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Love that shit.
Super popular. Super, super popular. But
the taste of the summer.
If you go back like 20 years before that, what was more popular? You had your Seagram's Wine Coolers was the other one.
Smirnoff Ices,
yeah, in the 90s. Yeah. And those are things I know about. But like, it's going to be really weird as we get older. Mike's Hard is probably just going to not be relevant anymore. Like, it'll be there. It'll be around. People will still buy it.
Yeah.
But it's going to be so much less relevant than, you know, your... I mean, it's going to be as relevant then as Seagram's Wine Coolers or, what's it we just said? Smirnoff Ice is relevant now. And yeah. It's going to be really weird. It's going to be really weird.
Looking forward to that. But yeah, so we're talking a little bit more about, like, so once you got this distillate, you can, go the vodka route and no tannins. It's just the straight pure ethanol and water. But that doesn't always taste super great. I don't know very many people who just want to sit around and drink vodka straight. It's a clean taste for sure. It's a clean look, but there's not a lot of depth to the flavor.
No. Vodka has the depth that you give to it from other stuff, basically.
The depth and flavor in a lot of booze, and if you want to just narrow into one specifically, whiskey, because whiskey is a great category that is so heavily focused on not the alcohol in the bottle, but everything that comes along with it, all the tannins, like, and all the ways that you can get flavor and tannins from different ways in different locations. One of the easiest ways to do it is to change up your mash bill. Mash bill is a term that we're going to throw around a lot, and you've probably already heard us throw it around before. A mash bill is kind of an American term, and it just means whatever is the stuff that you made your brew with, your low wine.
Mm-hmm.
Low wine is just the technical term for whatever you're going to distill into straight alcohol.
Yeah.
So you could say brandy. Brandy is a alcohol, and its mash bill is 100% grapes because it is just distilled wine.
Yep.
Yeah. Because brandy is most associated with France because France was really into wine. And then when the technology for distilling came along to France, they just thought, oh, well, let's just take these wines that we make and we like and just pull all the booze out of it and concentrate it, and boom, there you go, you got brandy. Same for Italy, they call it grappa. Same for Peru with pisco.
Yeah that's pisco brandy.
Yeah. There's a bunch of different alcohols with different names, but when you look into it, it's just a alcohol that's mash bill was 100% grape, and depending on where it was made, France is brandy, Italy is grappa, Peru is pisco, but they're all kind of just a grape mash bill.
Right. And if I'm remembering correctly, brandy is the oldest of the barrel aged spirits is the first one that was really produced.
Yeah, you're totally right.
The story I've heard about that is that it was more of an accidental thing. They just happened to be, like, at the time you would transport stuff like that in oak barrels. So they were transporting their brandy in oak barrels, and they found out that through the process of transporting it aged it and gave it more flavor.
Yeah, like they would put basically everything in barrels. Barrels was the shipping container of the day. And so you would put everything from coconuts to hardtack to beer. That's where IPAs came from, India Pale Ale. They originally called India Pale Ale because they were trying to ship beer from Western Europe all the way to India. And the only way to do that was to make it hoppy as fuck.
Yep, because hops are a preservative.
And put it in barrels. And so when they thought, oh, hey, we got this brandy and we made it, let's sell it to some people in New Orleans and Canada, because that was also French territory. They put it in barrels and they sent it across the ocean. And by the time it got there, it came out brown. And people pretty quickly realized, oh, hey, you know the stuff that is hot and white and comes right off the still? And you know the shit that's been sitting in this barrel for a year? I like the stuff that's been in the barrel for a year more.
Yeah, it tastes better.
Yeah. And so people really quickly realized, oh, okay, well, let's just make it, put it in a barrel, and wait. Like, we don't need to ship it. We'll just sit around and we'll wait.
Yeah, we'll just sit
and then it'll taste better.
Yeah. It's kind of just an interesting process of like how that came to be, that it wasn't like a fully intentional thing. It was more of a by means of convenience. Like, you know, if you think about if someone had come up with a different way of transporting stuff that wasn't barrels earlier, it might have been longer before, or might not even have the same like culture of aging spirits the same way that we do, like wood aging, barrel aging.
And like, what else are wooden barrels used for in modern day?
Not a lot.
I would hazard a guess to say that the vast majority of wooden barrels that get made in the world are being made specifically for use in the alcohol industry.
For aging, yeah. It's one of the really interesting things, is because we've kind of been talking around it a little bit, but yeah, bourbon specifically is aged, but it is aged in a very particular way, in which that you have to do a new oak barrel each time that is charred on the inside. And
which is not the most sustainable, but we'll put that aside for now.
It's not, but what's really interesting about that is because of that, there are a lot of ex-bourbon barrels on the market in general, because they can't reuse them.
Yeah, once you fill that barrel up and let it age and then pull the booze out of it, that barrel is spent. It can never be used again to make legal bourbon.
Technically, but the thing, it can't be used to, you need to start with a fresh oak barrel each time. So what you can do is you can reuse an old barrel to further age it. But it has to already have been, as it's like when you further age bourbon, you can do that with any of the whiskeys, more commonly with scotches. But they'll do it in ex-bourbon barrels, or ex-cognac barrels, or what's the Cabernet barrels, casks, or stuff like that, basically.
Yeah.
But you could technically do that with bourbon, too, but then you'd basically just be re-aging it in another barrel that bourbon was in. Because there's some... Okay.
I don't know of any American whiskeys or bourbon specifically that do that. Do you?
Not that use bourbon barrels, no. But technically you could. Most of them use like Sauternes casks or cognac casks
like Angel's Envy. Aging.
Yeah,
Angel's Envy finishes. It's often like finished in port barrels or finished in different barrels. Yeah, I've definitely heard of that.
So like technically you could reuse them for that purpose, but the big thing is like unless it's a bourbon of a particular quality or popularity, I don't know why you would, because it probably won't add much. It's going to just be more barrel aging. That's going to be less effective than the original barrel aging. But I could see maybe, I could see there being a way to do that. Like maybe if you did if you had different mash bill bourbons aged in different
It would be so slight.
It really probably wouldn't add much. But yeah, technically you could, but the problem is that like each time you make a new bourbon, you have to use new barrels. So then you're gonna end up with all of these used barrels.
Yes, that is one of the five rules that turns a mash bill of different cereal grains from just, you know, a mash bill, different cereal grains, neutral grain spirit, as you might find on a lot of things like Everclear or mixtos like Jose Cuervo that are cut with neutral grain spirit. There are five rules that turn a neutral grain spirit into a bourbon. And those are, let me see if I can remember them all. Has to be made inside of the U.S., anywhere in the U.S. You can make a bourbon in Alaska or Hawaii. Mm-hmm. It's totally fine.
You can.
Has to be at least 51% corn in the mash bill. And again, that just means corn has to make up at least 51% of whatever you're brewing to make your beer, your low wine. Has to be aged in a brand new, charred American oak barrel. Mm-hmm. And then the last two rules have to do with the specifics of what ABV it can be distilled at and what ABV it can go into the barrel in, which I never remember because they're very technical and not super important.
Yeah, they're not that relevant, honestly. That's pretty much all of it. It's very specific, but it's really not that restrictive other than the charred new oak barrels. Like the fact that you have to do that each time, it's, you know, you can do a lot within that framework. But
a lot of the tannins, the flavoring bits that make American bourbons, American whiskeys taste different from one another, come from those mash bills and where those new charred American oak barrels are stored. So you might have a bourbon with 80% corn in the mash bill and 10% malt barley, 10% rye, and you're going to age it in Kentucky for 4 years, and it comes out and it's something like Buffalo Trace. But then you could have something with a way lower corn in the mash bill, more rye, still about 10% barley, and you're going to age that in Denver, Colorado, and suddenly you have a craft distillery from Denver putting out a bourbon. You have Tin Cup is what you have.
Yeah.
Even though Tin Cup doesn't technically market itself as a bourbon, it does tick all the boxes.
It does, yeah. But it's not trying to fit in that market. I can understand why they would do that, because if you... because it's the same reason that a lot of bourbon is still made in Kentucky, even though it doesn't need to be. It's easier to market yourself.
And people are expecting a specific thing when they hear bourbon.
Yeah.
They're expecting a whiskey made in Kentucky that has those tannins that come from being in Kentucky, in a river valley, during summer, during winter. They're not expecting what comes out of a barrel that has spent its whole life in Colorado, you know, in Denver, a mile above sea level. It's going to change it a little bit, and it's going to come out tasting like Tin Cup, which is, I think, a great whiskey.
It's marketed as
just an American whiskey.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I like it. It definitely tastes different than any sort of off-the-shelf Kentucky bourbon. Now, you can tell that there's a difference there.
Right, yeah, I would agree. I've enjoyed Tin Cup. Actually, I think I like... It's weird, because I've had the Tin Cup, and I've had their... what is they have like a black label? It's their 10 year age.
Isn't that bottled in bond? Or oh yeah, it's 10 year.
Yeah, it's their 10 year. And their regular is their normal expression is much better than their 10 year.
I agree. Weird. But hey, they're like one of the first big ones that did a bunch of barrel aging in Denver and Colorado. So they had to let it go for 10 years to see what came out.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, got to experiment a little bit. But it's cool to it's really only starting to become more of a thing now, seeing bourbons come from other parts of the country, and there being more whiskey developed in the states that's not in Kentucky. So it's
Ohio, like Columbus, has a really nice craft distilling scene. I've gushed about it before on the podcast, and their bourbons are totally good. I'd put them up against any other like bourbon off the shelf.
There's some coming from Indiana now too that are pretty good. Obviously, I think the Indiana distillation laws are probably more restrictive, because there aren't that many distilleries in Indiana, there's a decent amount now. There's getting to be more and more, they're pretty decent stuff. But you can definitely tell that there's a little less experience in the production there.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we should probably talk about MGP.
Oh, MGP, the factory.
Yeah, it's in Indiana there is a.
This is a big pull back the curtain for anyone who is American and enjoys drinking alcohol, especially whiskeys of any sort.
Yep.
In the U.S., so MGP, also known colloquially as the factory, is this enormous distilling operation that is located in Indiana. And it came about as a result of World War II. World War II rolled around and rationing was a thing. And there was a bunch of farmers saying like, hey, we need to like distill, but you know, all the boys are off fighting the war. And so basically it ended up with, hey, the US is gonna have one distillery, the fucking distillery. You're gonna send your shit here and we're gonna turn it into whiskey. And then we'll ship it back to you and for you to age in barrels and do what you will. But we're gonna take the cereal grains, we're gonna brew it, we're gonna distill it, we're gonna get the juice, and then what you do with the juice after that is your business. But it is basically just a result of this collectivization that had to come about because of World War II.
Yep.
And it has never stopped. MGP, the factory, produces like most of the distillation, like the distillate of whiskeys made in the U.S. Like
it's a really big chunk of it. The big one is if you can think of a high rye bourbon in the United States, it's probably made at MGP, more than likely, because it's what is it? It's Bullet, Angel's Envy,
Whistle Pig,
Templeton, which Templeton actually got sued, which is funny. But for part of the reason because they were using MGP is because they were trying to market themselves as a craft small batch distillery. And MGP does make small batch distillate, but the way that Templeton was specifically phrasing it was misleading, and they got sued and had to literally rebrand and pull all the bottles off the shelf. It's very funny. There's a lot more whiskeys that you've had from the United States that are made specifically in MGP and then aged elsewhere than you would think.
Yes. So it's a big chunk. It's nothing bad. There's nothing. This isn't like a. It's kind of the dirty secret, but it shouldn't be. It's not super dirty. The liquid that comes out of the factory is great. It's good. But just to let you know, if you get a bottle of Bullet Rye and then you pick up a bottle of Whistle Pig Rye and the prices are really different, that difference is mostly marketing, because that juice, other than going to sit at their own warehouses, which, you know, Bullet ages their stuff in Kentucky, Whistle Pig ages their stuff in Kentucky. You know the kind of barrels that they have to use because legally both have to use.
Does Whistle Pig age their stuff in Kentucky?
Oh, I thought they did.
They're from Vermont. The company.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't realize that.
They're Vermont. Well, yeah.
Other than like maybe where they age it, it's the same liquid coming from the same factory, from the same mash bill, and going into the same types of barrels.
The juice is the same, very similar. Unless you're doing something unique, it's like that's with Angel's Envy. They do use an MGP distillate, but then they also have their like port age finish and all that other stuff too. So like you can make interesting stuff out of it, and it's not bad. Like the stuff that MGP produces is quality. It's just that there are a lot of very similar whiskeys that use all the same mash bill, that use all the same aging process. The only difference is the labeling and the marketing. And it's kind of a grift a little bit. Like, I mean, none of it's going to be bad. It's just, are you paying way more than you should be for it? Probably, more than likely. Because I guarantee you they get that distillate stupid cheap, so.
Can we name a couple that we know for sure don't come from the factory?
I don't believe Buffalo Traces does, because
there's a lot of
their mash bills are really weird. Well, they're much different than when it comes from MGP usually.
Yeah, I would say several of the old Kentucky distilleries, they are distilleries, and that's where they distill. They mm-hmm. never, they were around before World War II. They never needed to get rid of their equipment, and so they
right.
picked up distilling after that. I think Heaven Hill?
I would guess Heaven Hill. Heaven Hill's still family-owned, so I can't imagine that they've been around a really long time. MGP. They have their own they have their own bottled and bond like facility, so like I can't imagine they would go through MGP. I mean, they might for some products, but I doubt it.
At least not the majority.
No.
So anything from Heaven Hill, anything from Buffalo Trace Distillery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably a couple of other big ones. I wouldn't be able to say for sure. I would bet that like maybe like Jack Daniel's doesn't, just because.
Yeah. I do know that like Maker's Mark, Maker's Mark for sure doesn't because it's a weeder, and I don't think that MGP makes a weeder at all.
Yeah, that's the big thing. There was literally, I was working on Sunday and I had a bartender friend of mine come in and hang out for a little bit. And he pointed out a bottle that was new ownership. I was like, oh, have you tried this, that new whiskey you guys have? And I'm like, yeah, I did try a little bit when we got it, but I haven't had it for a bit. So I poured him and I just like a little taster of it so we could taste it. And I was looking at the front of it, and it was it's an Indiana bourbon. But then it was specifically, it talked about it being a high rye. And I was like, oh, I didn't even turn it around. I did not turn around. I'm like, I bet you money that this is MGP. And I turned it around and it's like, this is a small batch blend between two MGP distillates or two MGP whiskeys. And I was like, ha, called it. And it's almost every single high rye bourbon that you can find in the United States is pretty good chance. Like it's more than a 50-50 that it's probably MGP.
Yeah. And I do know that there is also a lot of craft distilleries that are mostly MGP, that they just buy some MGP juice, they throw it in some barrels, and then they release it as a craft cocktail, like a small distillery bourbon or something.
Yeah.
I know also a lot of them begin that way because it's really expensive to bust into the whiskey business.
Yeah.
Because you have to wait for 4 to 10 years to sell your first product.
Yeah, and you've got all that upfront of, you know, if you're going to make your own like distillation equipment or buy your own distillation equipment, like you've got to do all that, make your own distillate, and then start aging it. And that's like, now you then have to wait 4 years to even sell the product that you're trying to make. So not only is it a big upfront cost, then you have to like figure out, how do we keep this afloat for 4 years before we can even sell our first product?
Yeah. So it's a lot cheaper to just buy a shit ton of barrels and buy some juice from the factory and throw it in there.
Yep.
And then in a couple years, start selling it.
Yeah. And then maybe you can use that like that money that you make off that initial sale to then go for like forward from there.
Yeah.
So you don't have to keep buying from GP, but you know.
Yeah. I have heard of several like craft distilleries that got their start doing that. They started selling factory juice and then they transitioned into making their own distillate.
And I mean, it makes sense from a financial perspective.
Makes sense.
You know,
it's totally fine to do. I'm not like poo-pooing on anyone, because like those bottles that they sold tasted good, you know.
Yeah. As long as the product you're putting out is good. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine. Is there any other points you wanted to bring up, or do you want to get on to the movie stuff?
So that mostly covers just like barrel aging and stuff in the U.S. The only other point I would have to make is that since the U.S. and bourbon specifically has this weird stipulation about new barrels, that means that almost everything else in the world that is aged in a barrel is aged in an ex-bourbon barrel.
It's a lot
and
of
I mean, I mean literally everything else. If you see a bottle on a bar and it is brown, there is a 90% chance that that color came from a bourbon barrel.
Most tequila is aged in ex-bourbon barrels.
I have never had a tequila that was not aged in a bourbon barrel, but was still aged.
Yeah, it would have to be some kind of specific, like, they aged it in Cabernet barrels or something
Moderna
weird.
Moderna barrels.
Or, yeah, or like an ex-scotch, like an ex-peated scotch barrel or something weird. Like, you know, they would have to pick something really
like,
off the cuff. You know?
Scotch barrels are... Scotch is aged almost exclusively in ex-bourbon barrels, unless your scotch bottle specifically says 100% sherry cask.
Yeah.
It's going to have been in a bourbon barrel.
Well, so that's the really weird thing, is that actually that used to not be the case, and it's become more of a thing because bourbon has had such a boom. That what that means is there's so many bourbon barrels available for sale because, you know, the bourbon companies can't reuse it, so they need to offload that product somewhere, and there's all these other areas that
well, it's need become aging, like an important part of the U.S.'s export market is we are like U.S. is the country in the world that makes booze barrels.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you want to age your product in a barrel, you're going to be coming to the U.S. And that's why I don't think that bourbon stipulation will ever change. Nope. It's not necessarily that it makes the bourbon better. It's that it's an important component of America's export game.
Well,
is shipping out these barrels.
I think you're definitely right on like the economic scale of that. That's definitely a very good reason to keep doing it, and probably one of the reasons why they started doing it. Because I'm sure that there was someone who owned a barrel company. I'm doing the money fingers.
The money fingers, yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing money fingers. There's someone who owned a barrel company that had something to do with that stipulation. Guarantee it. Or at least a logging or lumber industry person, for sure. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the one thing that's nice about that is that it does make your aging really consistent. And you brought that up earlier. Because you have to do new charred oak barrels every single time. You can't use other kinds of barrels, and it has to be... There is a consistency there that you don't actually get in a lot of other aged products. Because especially like scotches... They can be aged in whatever and for however long really you want. And, you know, that's gonna have a lot more variety, but it's going to have less consistency, which, you know, there's pros and cons to, obviously. That's kind of interesting.
That's where, like, Scotch gets a lot of its fun tannins because America, like our whiskeys, we play around with the mash bill and we don't touch the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
In Scotland... They don't mess around with the mash bill. It's just all malt barley.
Yeah.
But they play around with the barrels and things like cooking their barley with peat and things to get different sorts of tannins in there.
So the barrel aging is more consistent, but like what you will find, and it's due to the climate, but then also because they don't use a freshly charred barrel. A lot of scotches are a much paler color. They're much lighter brown to tan. Then like bourbons are always going to be very dark because, you know, you charred that barrel and then you threw the liquid in it. So it's going to pick up all that dark color from the char and the barrel like right away. And then uses an ex-bourbon barrel is going to get less color because it's already been used once to age. So a lot of the thing that would have colored it, it's not going to color it as much this time. So.
And they're going to use those barrels over and over again, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
So you can have a fourth, third, like fifth use barrel on a scotch.
Oh, absolutely.
And you can, if you put a barrel of scotch in a barrel that's been used five times, you can leave it for 20 years and it's going to come out super pale.
Yeah.
And it's super, not going to get a lot of color.
Yeah. But that's one of the other reasons why the number of years you age a scotch. Is kind of really nebulous and doesn't really mean a lot. Mm-hmm. It does mean they put a lot of time into it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they have even more age. Like they got even more of the barrel. Like, yeah, probably, but depending on what kind of barrel they used, depending on a lot of factors, it may or may not be more aged.
That barrel was.
Yeah, it may or may not have gotten more of that barrel flavor than a bourbon could have from much shorter time frame.
Age statements mean a lot more when it comes to American whiskeys and bourbons, which is why, here's a cool trick, American bourbons are legally required to state how old they are, how long it's been in the barrel, if it's been less than 4 years.
Yep.
So somewhere on the bottle, it will be written, aged for 3 years, aged for 36 months, unless it has been aged for at least 4 years. In which case, they don't have to put any age statement on it at all.
Yep.
So, like this bottle of Maker's Mark, there's no age statement on this at all, which I know means, okay, it's been in the barrel for at least 4 years.
It's probably
been in a barrel for 4 years and a day.
Yeah.
Because they want to get that shit out there and start selling it.
It's also really interesting because for at least, I think this happens for scotch too, but if it's blended or if it's a blend at all, they have to do for American whiskey. I think this is true for scotch as well.
Yes, it is true for scotch.
It has to go for the lowest amount of years that it's aged if it's a blend. So
yes,
whatever year they put on it, it's very likely that
it's the youngest barrel in that blend.
Well, it has to be the youngest, but that means that
yes,
it could have older stuff in it. It's probably all about the same. More than if it's
so, if you get a Glenfiddich 12 year, mm-hmm. there's a good chance that some of that bottle has liquid from a barrel that was aging for, I don't know, 15 years.
Yeah,
but 14 or most 15 of it's going to be 12.
Yeah, most of it's going to be 12. But what's funny about that is rum is actually the opposite. Aged rum.
Yes, because rum has no rules.
Rum is crazy. It's good to do whatever it wants. But aged rum, and I didn't know this for a long time, but I pulled out a aged bottle of rum, and it said like 15 years on it. But what that means is they can put, it's the exact reverse, the oldest rum that you put in it in the blend, even if it's the smallest amount that you put in it.
Yes,
that's the age statement you can put on it.
You combined 100 barrels, and 99 of them were aged for a year, but one of them was there for 15. They'll put 15 on the bottle.
It's so ass backwards.
Because rum is just fucking Calvin Ball.
Yeah, it's literally whatever you want to do, and that's why there's so much variation in rum too, which is good. That is a good thing, because you know there's so many different kinds of rums to explore, but for the same reasons. You got some real high highs, you got some real low lows.
It's
just going to happen.
Okay. Well, I think that was a really good discussion about aging and barrels and whiskey. Yeah. But let's talk about a little bit about this fucking movie.
Yeah, let's get some more depth on Be Cool.
This is not a Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson movie.
Absolutely not. He does have a lot of lines.
He does.
For a side character.
It is a ensemble cast that is heavily weighted towards the main character, which is John Travolta.
Yeah, who I have to say is one of the dullest fucking movie characters that I've ever had to watch on screen.
He is... he looks like he's on tranquilizers the whole time.
He's like on barbiturates or something. Like, he
yes!
I know what they're going for. The idea, and maybe it works better in B Shorty. The idea is that he's like an ex, like mob moneylender, basically, like the kind of guy that would lend you money on the side, and then if you didn't pay him back, would come and break your legs.
He's some sort of real tough ex criminal.
Yeah, they have a name for it.
Shit doesn't scare him, basically.
Well, there's a name they keep calling him. I looked it up. It's a Jewish moneylender, basically, is what they keep calling him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm sure this is based on a novel, so was the previous movie. So I'm sure that was a big point in the novel, and they just don't really talk about it much in this. Maybe they talk about it more in the previous movie. I don't know. But anyway, what they're going for is that, nothing scares this guy. He's seen everything. You know, he's personally broken some legs and doesn't give a fuck.
But what it comes off as is him just being, like...
It comes off that John Travolta's bored. That's what it comes off as.
Yes!
It comes off like, not only is the character bored, that John Travolta is also bored, that he has to be in this movie. And I don't actually like John Travolta as an actor. I don't think he's that good. I think he was in Grease and got pretty popular, and he was kind of handsome, and he had a couple other movies that were big. And
Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, sure. He had a pretty good run of a few good movies. There's movies that he's in that I like a lot, but Pulp Fiction is the big one for me. Is that I really don't think that he adds anything at all to that movie, even a little bit, and that you could literally replace him with any other actor as long as they weren't a worse actor, and it'd be fine, like literally fine.
You know where I think he actually does a really good job is as the villain in the Daredevil movie from the mid-2000s. Mm.
That's not John Travolta.
What?
No, that's...
Wait.
No, it's a black actor, too, so it's really funny that you're confusing them. Are you thinking of... you're thinking of guy who plays Bullseye.
Punisher.
Oh, yeah, he is Daredevil. Punisher. You're right.
Sorry, I got confused because Punisher was in the Daredevil series on Netflix.
Yeah, I think that and
Yeah, he's the villain in the Punisher movie, and he does a really good job of that.
I haven't seen that in a while, but yeah, I remember him being kind of okay in that.
You know what? Like he was having Kat, fun. Kat also told me he does a really good job in Hairspray as the mom.
Mm.
So that was maybe pretty funny. Maybe I need to give that a watch.
I don't know. It was kind of gimmicky. I don't know. My point is, John Travolta is one of those actors who I think never really had like a top tier performance in anything, and just like coasted on being in a couple of really popular movies for like his entire life. And
you know what? I totally agree. Yeah, he was never swinging for the fences.
No.
Yeah,
like I've seen.
If he was a baseball player, he got a lot of walks.
Yeah,
that's what you can say. Yeah, you know this guy, he's fine. He gets a lot of walks.
But anyway, my point is like I generally he doesn't do a lot for me. I know some people that like that do really like John Travolta as an actor and like will watch stuff he's in on purpose. For me, it's like he just happens to be in movies that I watch, and he never adds anything to it. And this is one of those movies where maybe if it was a different leading man, this could have been a better movie for me. Honestly.
It was kind of boring. I did really say dull. In my notes, I have it written in a different way, is that John Travolta is fully aware that he has plot armor.
Yes, yeah, that's pretty much the truth, yeah.
People are like waving guns at him the whole time, and he doesn't have any sort of like cool super spy plan to get out of it. He's just like, I'm just going to walk in and maybe he'll point a gun at me, but I'll maybe talk my way out of it.
And he usually does. And he doesn't even talk his way out of stuff like in a clever way. He just...
No, he just kind of says, whatever. And then he kind of leaves and people just decide not to shoot him.
Right. It happens a lot in this movie that just happens, or that he just gets lucky by chance that the guy that was going to kill him gets killed first somehow.
Yeah, he... People just decide not to shoot him, like, by happenstance. Not because he's super tough or super scary or super charismatic.
Such a weird movie, and it's long.
He's so bored that he comes into the scene, and everyone who was hot and passionate and ready to commit murder also suddenly gets bored and kind of over the scene, and they just let him walk away because they're like, oh, fuck, whatever.
Okay, I had to look at the length of this movie because I would have put money on it being like 2.5 hours just because of how long it felt. It's a solid 2 hours, which is still way longer than it should have been. Because it just a whole lot of nothing happens in this. It's literally just
from a whole lot of nothing.
One scene to the next of nothing. Like there's like the plot is about John Travolta was a movie producer in the last movie, I guess. And
yeah, now he's getting into producing a singer just because he kind of wants to vaguely.
Yeah, and his friend died. His friend got shot in front of him. Which he was very nonplussed about.
He was very blasé because he's blasé about everything.
Literally everything.
I did have another note that this movie is not in a hurry to get to the plot.
No, like, it literally takes it like 45 minutes before it even gets anywhere. And it's just all so random and weird and...
It kind of does that thing of like, oh, there's a bunch of different factions and groups and characters who all have their own plots and motivations going on, and it kind of does the Guy Ritchie vignette, all these people are going to come together in some way, except it's as if a Guy Ritchie movie was made where everyone was on Quaaludes.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone was bored the whole time. Everyone's way, like, everyone's like at least two levels more boring than they would be in any Guy Ritchie movie. At least two levels.
Let's talk about The Rock's involvement in this movie.
Yeah, so, and this is, you can tell this movie's made in the early 2000s. You can really tell. And it's probably based on a book that was written in the 90s. Because The Rock plays the bodyguard to the main antagonist.
Vince Vaughn.
Who is Vince Vaughn, who, without a better way to phrase it, without having to explain it a lot more, he's a wigger. He's a white guy trying to pretend he's black and using a lot of black slang.
Yes, he is a white guy attempting to co-opt early 2000s black culture.
Yes, and the movie is trying to play it off as a joke, but it's like so cringy that it's not funny.
Yeah, it's not good.
And
it's not a good look for Vince Vaughn either. He's not the guy to play it.
I had vaguely...
Seth, Seth Green made the tiniest cameo in this movie.
I'm assuming he was in the first one. I'm assuming he was in the first one.
I guess so. He would have played such a better Vince Vaughn character.
He would have. Yeah, Seth Green would have been great in that role. I'm assuming Seth Green is the first one. I have not looked it up because I don't care. but anyway, The Rock is playing that guy's bodyguard. And the first thing they tell you about The Rock's character is that he is gay.
And an aspiring actor.
And
boy howdy, does this movie not age well vis-a-vis gay slurs.
It sure doesn't. It's like even like the main characters, the good characters, talk about it in like hushed tones almost. Like it's like a big fucking deal. And then all of the bad characters just throw out slurs left and right about him being gay. And The Rock just takes it for the most part. I think there's one scene where he gets pissed off about it. He has enough.
Yeah.
Like threatens to hit somebody over it. And it's like, man, this movie is just, there's a certain level of, yeah, you can have a bad guy doing bad things and that's not you promoting it. But when you do that too many times in a movie, you're just promoting it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, yes, all the characters that do that usually get a comeuppance at the end of the movie. Like they get shot or something. And that's cool, I guess. But it's supposed to be played for laughs, and it's supposed to be played as in, oh, these guys are being real dicks about it. But it just comes off like this is kind of just how the author feels, you know, a little bit.
Yes.
Like, he has to make his villain say it because he's too chicken shit to say it out loud.
Yes, I got that feeling for sure.
But anyway, no, I brought up earlier.
And there's even, like, they say, like, the hard N-word several times.
Yeah.
But they give a character an entire speech about how that sucks and it's not good.
Yeah, and actually, that was a really good line. That was a really good speech. Cedric the Entertainer, probably one of the better characters in this movie, too. One of the more interesting ones, for sure.
I'm pretty sure Cedric the Entertainer is supposed to be a fantasy Suge Knight in this movie.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, kind of, sort of. His character is actually really funny. His is probably the most entertaining, which is funny. but you can tell he's like at least having a little bit of fun with it, and his character has like some,
you know what,
depth.
Entertaining? I think The Rock was the most entertaining actor in this entire movie.
Well, that's the thing.
All the scenes with him in it were more enjoyable than all the other scenes.
Well, you can tell The Rock is kind of having fun with this part because he's definitely specifically typed. He's cast out of type on purpose.
Yes.
That's the joke. That's part of the joke. The fact that he has to be gay, or that the part him being gay is part of the joke, I don't really care for. But, well, there's ways to do that where it wouldn't be bad. But the problem is, like, A, he's the only gay character in this entire movie. B, they also make him really stupid. He's a himbo. He's a total himbo.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, he is very himbo.
But
he's kind of doing it. He's a meathead chunky guy who's in Hollywood to become a big shot actor. Mm-hmm. That's very himbo vibes.
Yeah, but you can tell The Rock is having fun though, because you can, like, I mean, on the back of the last few movies that we watch, where like he doesn't get to have any fun at all in any of them, he just has to be dead serious the whole fucking time. This is where you can see, this is the first movie we've seen watched so far where you can see a little bit of the future Rock shining through, where he gets to be goofy and have some fun and, like, you know, do a little something
I do very much enjoy that.
Yeah.
And that's why all the scenes with him are more entertaining.
Yeah.
Because, again, this movie also didn't realize, just like The Scorpion King, that they had this white-hot molten core of charisma on their hands, and they underutilized the shit out of The Rock.
Absolutely. So what's one of the other things I wanted to bring up? Steven Tyler's in this movie as a cameo.
Yeah.
As himself.
They
make a joke about it.
Yes, they hang a lampshade on the fact that, like, I'm not one of those pop stars that does movies. It's like, oh, you're in a movie. Yeah, I get it.
But they've done jokes like that like 3 or 4 times already by that point. Like, not that specific joke, but a joke on a joke.
The movie opens, the first line is John Travolta's character saying, ugh, sequels.
Right. Because they walk by a sequel to Get Shorty, which is a movie that John Travolta made, I guess, in canon.
In canon.
Oh, and he's talking to what's the actor's name? He sucks. He sucks a lot. James Woods.
That's who it was. I kept thinking, is that like Billy Crystal? Because his voice kind of sounds similar.
It's James Woods.
Yeah, it's James Woods.
James Woods is one of those old white actors that turns out is also super conservative and sucks, which bums me out because he's not a bad actor and he's been in some decent movies. I've liked him in some movies. I like him better than I like John Travolta as an actor, for sure. like, that's not even a contest. Like, honestly, I was thinking about the beginning of that movie because James Woods' character is the person who gets shot, like, very early on and dies and kind of kicks off the whole plot, kind of.
Yeah.
Even though the movie forgets about it for a little bit, like, in the first, like, 30 minutes. Honestly, if you had swapped their parts, if it had been James Woods as the leading man the whole time, yeah, I would have been, like, cringing a little bit because James Woods sucks, but I also probably would have been more entertained. So...
He did have the most emotion out of anybody in this entire movie.
Yeah, he had, like, maybe, like, 10 lines, maybe, in the first 10 minutes.
Maybe the director was on Quaaludes the whole time and was just is toning everyone down way too much.
Fucking maybe,
okay.
I don't know.
Okay, the last kind of point I want to make about the movie is... The Rock has baggy shirts on the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he does take his shirt off right at the end for a little dance number.
He does, yeah.
And you can totally see he does not have abs. He's got like a keg is what you call it. When you can't see any of the abs, but you can tell that he's muscular and he's built. And that absolutely... ultra confirms my theory of him going shirt on, shirt off per movie, depending on whether he is bulking or cutting. And yeah, he doesn't have tight fitting shirts or shirt off, and then he does take his shirt off and he is totally not ripped. He is totally dad bodded out because he is bulking for this movie.
You need to start a Excel sheet where you keep track of this.
I'm keeping track of this. It's been true up to this point. The next movie we're gonna do is Doom, and I know for a fact that he doesn't take his shirt off, but like, I mean, so that's the one that breaks the chain.
He never has a good reason to either, so you know.
Yeah.
I think I feel like we've talked about most of the stuff I have about this. This movie's bad. This is a bad movie. I was really bored watching it.
Yeah, bad movie, not good.
And it was a really weird movie to watch right after Walking Tall because they're very, very different movies. Because Walking Tall,
Walking Tall is go, plot, action.
It's all plot.
Tight. 83 minutes. So tight. This one, just fucking... Just, 83 minutes would have been too long, and it drags it out more.
Yeah, and this movie still made money. And this is, once again, the prequel was very popular, so the sequel made a lot of money, even though it's a bad movie. The only other thing I had to say is we didn't talk about it at all. Uma Thurman is in this movie. And you kind of forget about it because she also feels like she's on Quaaludes. I guarantee you she doesn't want to be here. And the biggest thing for me that pissed me off, I was annoyed watching the scene. They specifically have a completely unplot-related scene where John Travolta and Uma Thurman's character go to a club.
Yes.
And they're just talking.
And the Black Eyed Peas are there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot the Black Eyed Peas were there. Oh, man. Anyway, but they specifically go dance on the dance floor. John Travolta and Uma Thurman.
Yes. There's just an entire long scene.
Very long. They
dance to an entire song.
Very long. Like, that whole scene's got to be like 10 minutes. All together, like them in the club, it's gonna be 10 minutes. Nothing plot relevant happens whatsoever. Not a single thing. I know they're trying to like build a relationship or whatever. It doesn't work. There's no chemistry. Well, there's a little bit of chemistry, but I think my point is what they're absolutely trying to do is, ooh, we got John Travolta and Uma Thurman to be in a movie together for the first time since Pulp Fiction, where they also danced on a dance floor. And it was a fun, kitschy scene because it was everyone wanted to be there, and it was directed by someone who gave a shit. And God, it just pissed me off so bad because, like, I know what you're trying to do, movie. You're trying to make me think your movie is better by reminding me of a good movie that both of these actors were in, doing the same thing they're doing right now. But it's not gonna work.
Yeah,
it's not gonna work.
No, because Man, this movie isn't even bad. It's just not good.
It's boring. It's dull. It is a dull movie. It is a dull affair. It's
dull.
Oh, Harvey Keitel's also in this, which I thought was funny. Mostly because he's kind of the main bad guy, but not really. It's like him and Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, everyone is in this movie, and none of them do anything.
Yeah, no one does anything, and everyone keeps talking about doing things, and they kind of do the thing, and then they don't really do the thing, and then they talk about it some more. And then
everyone in this movie is so sleepy.
So sleepy. But it bums me out, because Harvey Keitel's a great actor, and also, I think he has fewer lines than The Rock, which is weird for, like, the time period, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
Vince Vaughn and The Rock definitely both have more lines than fucking Harvey Keitel.
I'm very much looking forward to the movie we're going to watch after this.
Yeah, me too.
Which is Doom.
That's going to be way better.
It's going to be so much more entertaining.
It's going to be way better. Okay, great. I'm very excited about that.
Well, now we have to make a drink based off of this very dull film.
Yeah, I guess so. Is there any liquor that is specifically mentioned in this very boring movie? I can't remember.
The only thing that comes to mind is that John Travolta's character, Kat pointed this out, so this is all Kat's idea. John Travolta's character has a great name. His name is... Do you remember it?
Nope.
They say it a lot.
It's true.
Oh, it's great. His name is Chili Palmer.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty fucking great name.
Yeah, it is. It is a really good name. Are you going with the Chili vibes on that? Is that like, where you want to bounce off of that?
Well, an Arnold Palmer is already a really nice drink. Mm-hmm. It's tea and lemonade. Mm-hmm. And then chili, that just like Chili Palmer. Doesn't that name make you want to say like, oh, can I get a Chili Palmer?
You know what? It does. That's actually a really good fucking point. And that
you know what? This whole movie is fucking boring. The most exciting thing is the main character's name.
Yeah.
Let's make a drink based entirely on the main character's name.
And honestly, that's probably pretty easy because, I mean, you do an Arnold Palmer build. Well, you start with that. Tea and lemonade. I mean,
tea, lemonade. We already have two components there.
Yeah. So I think you.
At least tea and lemon.
Yeah. So you do tea and lemon, I think. Or you could do a tea infusion on something. That might be the best way to do it.
You can infuse, like, a gin with some Earl Grey tea or something.
No. This movie doesn't deserve gin. No. This movie gets vodka and it's gonna like it. That's what's gonna happen.
I want to drink the drink and I want the drink to be good.
Well, we're gonna tea infuse the vodka. That's what we're gonna do. Instead of putting tea in it, you just tea infuse your vodka. Now it's, you know, not just vodka.
No, it's just boozy Earl Grey.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, let's do Earl Grey tea. Perfect. So you Earl Grey infuse your vodka. You mix it with lemonade, which is just lemon and sugar. So probably, I mean, this movie should probably be more on the sweet side. You know.
Yeah. We're suddenly working with basically just a vodka sour.
Yeah, vodka sour.
But we're zhuzhing it up by infusing Earl Grey into the vodka.
Yeah, and then we need some kind of. Chili pepper. So, what kind of pepper would you think would go well with this movie? What's the one? I feel like not anything too spicy. You want a little bit of a spice.
First idea, best idea, easiest idea, Ancho Reyes.
Sure. Oh yeah, I can see that.
Ancho Reyes.
Yeah.
And it's a liqueur.
Yeah.
Let's take this. It's a sour right now. Mm-hmm. Let's just turn it into a daisy.
Sure.
So it's just a margarita build.
Yeah.
We have our Earl Grey infused vodka. Mm-hmm. We have Ancho Reyes instead of our Cointreau,
right?
And then lemon instead of lime, and then
I'm going to say
a little bit of.
I'm going to say this probably needs to be a little bit sweeter than a normal daisy build. I think you're going to need to split base and or add extra sugar because this movie is. So like daisies are really good; they're usually pretty balanced, I think, but they are more on the tart side because they have less sugar. This movie, is not tart. This movie is bland.
Yeah, and Ancho Reyes does not have as much sugar as, say, Cointreau.
Yeah, I think you could do like a half ounce of some kind of syrup. I mean, honestly, just do simple syrup. That'd be fine.
What if we do an Earl Grey syrup?
Okay, that could work too. Yeah, then you don't have to infuse your liquor.
Yeah.
I've made Earl Grey syrup.
Infuse the liquor and infuse the syrup.
Oh, sure. Yeah, why not?
Just double down on the Earl Grey? I don't know if that would be good, but... Or we could also just do honey.
Yeah, you know... Actually, yeah, I'm okay with honey because I think this movie is trying to play off Chili Palmer as a silver-tongued devil kind of guy, and it never really works, but it's what they're going for.
It really does not.
It's what they're going for. Okay, here's the other thing. Are we incorporating The Rock into this at all?
No, but that's fine because The Rock really wasn't incorporated into this movie at all.
He sure wasn't. He was just kind of there. And yeah. He was good every time he was there, and I respect that. Yeah, and I think that sounds pretty good, generally. Maybe you do like a half salt rim?
I don't know if salt would super go with this, though.
I don't know. I feel like, well, when you talk about like peppers and like, yeah, maybe not with the Earl Grey, though. I don't know. For me, it's every time you do like a peppery flavor, I think salt with that spice and the salt kind of works for me, but I'm also just salty about this movie, so.
I think maybe just the fucking serve this up in a coupe and throw a lemon twist on it.
Sure. I was kind of thinking more on like a, make it like a long, like make it a, oh, this is a long movie. It should be a long form. Put it in a Collins glass.
Put it in a Collins glass, throw some soda water on top.
Top it with some soda water.
I feel like that would make this drink worse. Because and I don't want to make a bad drink. I don't want to drink a bad
It's
drink.
Not going to be bad. I mean, it's like a Tom Collins, basically. You're making it. It's an Earl Grey Tom Collins.
I want to get that Earl Grey flavor in there, though. Yeah. And I don't want it to be so muted as to be like, eh.
Well, that's my thing.
Because Earl Grey is not super punchy. And I think it needs to be more concentrated and upfront to go against the entrees.
I think if you infuse your vodka with the Earl Grey, you'll be fine. I think,
you think
Earl
so?
Grey infused vodka. It's going to be enough of your ingredient list. Like, because, I mean, what are we saying? Like 2 ounces of vodka?
I was going with just my standard Daisy build. So 1.5 ounces of spirit, 1/2 ounce of your liqueur, and then 3/4 ounce citrus, 1/2 ounce of syrup.
Okay, yeah, I'm fine with that. But still, 1.5 ounces, it's going to be more of your overall liquid than most of the other ingredients. So I think that'll work out fine with an Earl Grey infusion. Like, that's going to come through, I would say.
Okay, I can see it, yeah. I'm definitely down to try it. I leave open serving this up and in a coupe.
Okay. I think the appropriate way is to do it long and drink it slow throughout this entire movie, and then maybe take a shot or two while you're doing it. Sorry. Yeah. No. This movie is.
It's not a great movie. Maybe the one before it was fun.
Is this the worst movie that we've watched so far? Is it in this list?
You know what? Out of Walking Tall wasn't good, but at least it got in and got out.
Yeah, it wasn't trying to take its time.
It did not overstay its welcome.
Yeah, this movie definitely overstayed its welcome. I mean, I think The Rundown was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't amazing, but it was pretty good.
I think The Rundown was quite enjoyable. It's a great action movie. It's a great little action flick. You could have released that in 2018.
I still would have held up. I still hold. If you had one good needle drop in that movie would be about 10% better.
Oh, just one good, like, hits a song real good?
Uh-huh. Well, one needle drop right when he's doing, pulls out the shotguns and starts doing that.
Yeah, right when he pulls out the shotguns, just really needed to have, what music, I know some music came on, but was it just generic?
Yeah, it's just like generic
guitar,
like,
and drums?
Like rock music in the background, yeah. It was.
Yeah, if they had just suddenly hit Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah,
just hit
Welcome to
the
Jungle
would
have been great.
Man, that would have been, they could have foreshadowed it earlier in the very first scene where he's sitting in the car.
For sure.
And the radio is just playing Welcome to the Jungle, and it's like tinny. And
oh, no, they should have done it
just in the background.
When he was in the airplane, have Welcome to the Jungle be like staticky in the background. Yeah, man.
Or even that, like just put it like ambient noise somewhere in the movie, and then right as he gets those two shotguns, just hit Welcome to the Jungle.
Just
well, yeah, cool. that would make that movie... Yeah,
I'm telling you, like a solid 10. Like it's, I think it's already like a 70, 75. But you know, if it had Welcome to the Jungle, it's gonna be a solid BB minus now. You know, go from a high C to a low B. That's pretty good. I don't know. Yeah, I think this is probably the worst one we've done. I think the Scorpion King wasn't very good either, but at least the Scorpion King was like trying something a little interesting, you know? It was kind of uncharted territory.
I like the Scorpion King.
It's fine.
I'm down with the Scorpion King. It's a okay fun romp. There's magic, there's fantasy, there's, you know,
I think stuff. It might be better than... No, I think Mummy Returns is still better than the Scorpion King, and I don't like Mummy Returns very much.
Okay, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, it's because Brendan Fraser's doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
He's just very charismatic. And they figured out
his
deal. The
Rock is doing a lot of work in the Scorpion King, even though they didn't realize it.
Yeah, my thing is, like, at least with Mummy Returns, they knew what they were doing with Brendan Fraser, you know what I mean? Whereas Scorpion King, they had no idea. I think that's why Scorpion King fell so flat for me, is it's like, they have no idea what they're doing with The Rock. They have no clue. And that makes it fall flat. Because at least this movie has a little bit of an idea. You know, they got it a little bit. They let him do his thing a little, you know?
All right, so
Chili Palmer.
This drink we have is 1.5 ounces of Earl Grey infused vodka, mm-hmm. 1/2 ounce of Ancho Reyes, mm-hmm. 3/4 ounce of lemon juice, 1/2 ounce of honey syrup. Shake that, serve in a Collins glass, top with soda, mm-hmm. and garnish with a plain old lemon peel.
Yep. A little expression on top. Yeah.
You know what? Yeah, and an Arnold Palmer, it's a long drink.
Yeah, it's
usually
a long
form. You might be right.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to serve this. That'll be good. I do understand I understand your inclination, because I also often just want to put things in coupes.
Yes, like just up, I think everything coupe. Needs to be served up in a coupe.
Most things are better that way. That's how I like my margaritas. Margaritas up in a coupe.
That's the best way to have a margarita.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is a drink that is definitely befitting of this very good name, Chili Palmer.
Yeah. Maybe not so much with the movie, but yeah, definitely the... Yeah.
I really want to try this.
I actually would definitely be down to try it. I would be down to try it. Yeah. Not too shabby. Not too shabby. Cool. So next time we're doing Doom.
Next time we're doing fucking Doom. We're going to pick a very light bartender-y topic.
We're just going to talk about Doom for like an
hour
and a half.
Oh, fuck. I got to talk so much about Doom. Oh, man. This is one of my favorite movies, unironically.
Look. I'm not going to say it's a perfect movie, but it is easily one of the best video game movies ever made. Not a high bar, but...
You know what? We're going to have to talk about this more next time. Okay. I can't get into it now. All right.
You can.
Well, again, it was fun. I think we made a pretty good drink.
Yeah.
I will talk to you later.
Later, bud.
So much for listening to that episode. I had a lot of fun. Logan, did you have a lot of fun, Logan?
I had a really good time.
Yeah, it was a really good time. We got drunk, we talked about a thing, we made a cocktail.
That sure was a thing.
If you want to hear more about the cocktails that we're making, follow us on Instagram at Cocktail Conceit. We post more than just the cocktails on the show. We post cocktails that we're working on in our outside life. And if you want to ask us about media or cocktails or anything in between, contact us by emailing overlyhornybostonbusdriver@gmail.com. Logan, how do you spell that?
I'm not spelling that, Adam, but it is overlyhornybostonbusdriver@gmail.com. Pretty easy to figure out. And if you'd like to further support us, you can join us on Patreon, where you'll get access to exclusive content and cocktails made by yours truly. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Oh, hey, there's Toby.
It's Toby. There he is. He's got a spot. What do you know?